Hey everybody, it's Emily, and I'm coming at you with another episode of my forensic science podcast entitled Case Studies with Emily. And today we are going to be talking about my weekly case, which is a very well-known one, and it is the Lindbergh kidnapping case. So let's get started. So, a brief description of the case. So, on March 1st, 1932, 20-month-old son of aviation hero Charles Lindbergh was kidnapped from his family's mansion in Hopewell, New Jersey. Immediately, a search of the premises took place and a ransom note demanding $50,000 was found on the nursery windowsill. They uncovered that the kidnapper used a ladder to climb up to the open second floor window and also left muddy footprints in the room. The Lindberghs became overwhelmed by offers of assistance and false clues. In fact, even Al Capone reached out. 3 days passed and the investigation found nothing. No word from the kidnapper had been received either. However, later on March 6th, a second note demanding $70,000 emerged. A third note then followed on the 8th, informing that an intermediary appointed by the Lindberghs would not be accepted and requesting a note in the newspaper. So basically, this suspect/unsub wanted publicity. The next day, a fourth ransom note was found giving Principal Condon approval of being the in-between man. Notes then came specifically for Condon to discuss tokens of the victim's identity along with payment information. Soon there were 12 ransom notes. As a token of the victim's identity, the unsub sent in baby clothes that were later identified as Lindbergh's. The nurse also found the thumb guard the baby was wearing the night of his kidnapping in front of the estate. The unsub became a patient due to lack of publicity and threatened to increase his demand to $100,000. The last few notes were directions as to how Condon met up with John, quote-unquote John, to give him his dues. In exchange, John gave a 13th note containing information saying the baby was on a boat called Nellie off the coast of Massachusetts. However, searches for the boat and the victim came back negative. On May 12th, the body of Lindbergh's son was accidentally found. It had been partially buried, badly decomposed, and found 45 feet from the highway in Mercer County, New Jersey. The head was crushed, there was a hole in the skull, and some of the body members were missing. Later, the body was positively identified and cremated at Trenton, New Jersey, on May 13, 1932. The coroner's examination showed that the child had been dead for about 2 months, and that death was caused by a blow to the head. Some people believe death happened that night of the kidnapping also. The kidnapping looked like it would go unsolved until September 1934. That's when a marked bill from the ransom turned up. The gas station attendant who accepted the bill wrote down the license plate number due to suspicion of the driver. It was tracked back to a German immigrant and a carpenter named Bruno Hauptmann. When his home was searched, detectives found a chunk of Lindbergh's ransom money. Hauptmann defended himself by saying that a friend had given him the money to hold and that he had no connection to the crime. However, the resulting trial was a national sensation. The prosecution's case, though, was not strong, with the main evidence besides the money being the testimony from handwriting experts that the ransom note had been written by Hauptmann. It still worked. The prosecution also tried to establish a connection between Hauptmann and the type of wood that was used to make the ladder. Still, the evidence was in intense public pressure were enough to convict Hauptmann, and he was electrocuted in 1936. As a result of this crime, kidnapping was then made a federal offense. Alright, so let's talk about who all was involved. So, the victim, I know I didn't really go into detail about who the victim was, other than him, like, his popular status. But his name was Charles Augustus Lindbergh Jr., and as you may have guessed, his father was also Charles Augustus Lindbergh. And if you don't really know who that is, he's an aviation hero. He was the first person in America to fly specifically from New York to Paris, but like we like to say, he was the first person to fly over the Atlantic. His mother was Anne Mora Lindbergh, and the nurse who found, was the first person to, know that the baby was missing was Betty Goh. Also, disclaimer, sorry if these names are not, pronounced correctly. I'm trying my best. Anyway, the suspect slash unsub was Frank Hauptmann, and he was calling himself John during all those money transactions with Condon. And then the in-between man, or the principal's name, was Dr. John F. Condon. So when and where was this crime committed? Well, the kidnapping itself was committed in Hopewell, New Jersey, and the investigation lasted from 1932 to 1934, which is crazy, because, I would not be that patient, especially if it was a 20-month-year-old kid. Anyway, then again, after that, Hauptmann's appeal to the Supreme Court and legal outcome lasted until 1936, so 1935 and 1936, he was still trying to prove his innocence, which we'll get to that outcome in a minute. All right, my favorite part, evidence. So there's a lot of evidence in this case, starting with the footprints in the room, which they classified as a mud footprint. There also was a ladder outside the window of the baby's nursery, the body of the victim, and the fractures and misplacements on body, including the parts that weren't there. All of the ransom notes are considered evidence. Also, the writing in the newspaper where Condon and Hauptmann are not only communicating but talking to each other through the newspaper is also evidence. The thumb guard and clothing that were found as evidence of the baby being he had connection to the baby was found. Thumb guard was in front of the estate. It wasn't given to him by John, but the nurse found it. And I'm pretty sure if it was there the night that it happened, they would have found it before all the ransom notes started flooding in. Anyway, the handwriting is also a huge thing of evidence in this case, specifically because the notes were handwritten, and that's actually how we convicted Hauptmann. Gold certificates and ransom money were also found in Hauptmann's garage, specifically $13,750 of it. So either he'd already spent it or something else freaky happened. And then the tool marks and wood on the ladder were matched with the wood and the tools that Hauptmann has. And then Codon's info was scratched, his address and his phone number, any method that he used to communicate with him was scratched on a wall in his apartment. So all odds are this guy's not looking too good. So how did he become a suspect? Well, a suspect became a suspect after a bank / gas station worker. Depends on which source you read. Some people claim it was someone who worked at a bank area in a gas station. Others just say it was a bank worker. But they connected the dots to find the unusual bill amount of money as part of the crime of the century. He wrote down the license plate and immediately reported it to the police. As far as means, motive, and opportunity, there wasn't really much said about why or how or when or all that jazz, but the Lindberghs are very well known and very wealthy, so the suspect could have just been jealous of the fame. But keep in mind that the date this happened was also during World War II, and the guy was a German immigrant, so it also could have been done due to political reasons. All right, so the legal outcome. Hoffman was convicted with murder and extortion, and he was later electrocuted April 3rd, 1936 at 8:47 p.m. So if it helps you sleep at night after hearing this podcast, just know the guy who was guilty is dead. So there you go. Why do I think this case is famous? Well, like, there's the obvious stuff that it's unsettling, and it's a 20-month-year-old baby. Like, dang. I can't wrap my head around it. Also, the lies in the ransom notes lead the victim's family and police to believe the victim was alive when evidence pointed elsewhere. Why couldn't, I don't know, with as much publicity as this unsub was seeking, it's very unsettling as to why he kept lying about the victim being alive. How, I don't know, maybe something didn't go as planned and he had to kill the baby, or he just wanted the money. Because they knew that they wouldn't be giving him money if they knew the baby was dead. That's probably it. But what am I to know? This guy can't really tell me he's dead. Anyway, I think it's personally famous because not only did it happen to a well-known family, it happened during World War II, which was already putting the country in such tragic circumstances. This case just darkened the country even more. And what I mean by that, like, we were already, like, living in tragedy, and the world just seemed like it was falling apart during World War II. So when this case happened, it was, like, even more destruction just set in on our country specifically, but on the world, because I have a feeling it probably was, like, world-breaking news. All right, thanks for tuning in with me. Once again, I'm Emily, and this is my Forensic Science Podcast, Case Studies with Emily. I'll catch y'all next week for a new case study.